Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the press conference for the new Civil Rights Project report titled The Courts, the Legislature, and Delaware's Resegregation. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded December 19th, 2014. I would now like to turn the conference over to our speakers, Professor Gary Orfield, UCLA Professor and Co-Director of the Civil Rights Project, Genevieve Siegel-Hawley, Assistant Professor, Virginia Commonwealth University, and Ariel Niemeyer, Lead Author of the new report and PhD candidate. Please go ahead, Professor Orfield.
It's a pleasure to be with you today to release an important report on one of the states that has went further in the desegregation process than almost any place in the United States and has sadly reversed that progress in recent years and is now experiencing deepening segregation. The Civil Rights Project is a nonpartisan research center, an interdisciplinary research center that was founded at Harvard University 17 years ago, moved to UCLA in 2007, and has produced more than 500 studies of civil rights issues and going on 20 books from conferences and so forth. We've had a continuing interest in the progress of the country in realizing the goals of Brown versus Board of Education to end the vestiges of legal segregation and discrimination in America's public schools. We've issued many reports, and this is part of a series of reports that we're doing on the Eastern Seaboard. Our data, which has followed this issue now for two decades, shows that desegregation increased in the United States, particularly from the middle 1960s, from the passage of the Civil Rights Act, up until the late 1980s, late in the Reagan administration, for black students, and that the progress was greatest in the states that had legal segregation, segregation by law, like Delaware, there were 11 states of the South and 6 what we call border states, 17 states plus the District of Columbia had legal segregation. A great deal of progress was made until the late 1980s, and beginning in the early 1990s, there were a series of Supreme Court decisions, after the Supreme Court had been changed in terms of its membership, that led to the dismantling of desegregation plans across the country, and particularly in the large school districts. And the Delaware case was a classic example of that. We have found that segregation for black students and for Latino students has been steadily increasing ever since those decisions. In other words, there was major progress, lasting progress, that took place over decades, followed by a consistent pattern of reversal and deepening segregation, which has been very troublesome from a civil rights perspective because there's become more and more evidence that this harms children's lives and diminishes the capacity of our society to adjust to the tremendous racial transformation that we're undergoing as a society. Back in the days of the school desegregation controversy, people used to blame the decline in white enrollment and the increase in minority enrollment on desegregation. Now that we have had desegregation ended in most large school districts, that decline has continued, and it's basically because of different birth rates and immigration patterns, since much of the growth of student population in the United States is now Latino and Asian. We have a big challenge in front of us, and this report is one of many efforts that we and others are making to call attention of the country to the fact that we've neglected this issue, we've been going backwards, we have no good alternative, since there's no record of any large school district achieving schools that are truly separate but equal, something the Supreme Court really said was impossible in American society because it said schools that were segregated by law were inherently unequal in Brown versus Board of Education. So So with that as a general introduction, I'm going to turn this over to Professor Siegel Hawley, who will tell you something more about the specific project we're doing along the Eastern Seaboard and the consequences of the segregation in terms of a massive body of educational research. Professor Siegel Hawley.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Genevieve Siegel Hawley, and I'm an assistant professor at Virginia Commonwealth University. This is the ninth in a series of 12 Civil Rights Project reports on school segregation in the Northeastern and Mid-Atlantic states. We have found the same broad trends, increasing segregation alongside growing racial diversity, in each of the states we've studied, but substantial variation in how extreme patterns of segregation are. Much of this relates to whether or not the major metros in our states had comprehensive plans for school desegregation. Though we find that segregation is increasing rapidly in Delaware schools, it has not reached the same levels that its neighbors to the north and south have experienced for many years. You can find the Civil Rights Project report on Maryland school segregation on our website at www.civilrightsproject.ucla.edu, and we expect to release the Pennsylvania report in January, when it will also be available on our website. Before I turn it over to Ariel, who's going to walk us through some of the key enrollment and segregation statistics from the Delaware report, I do want to talk for a minute about why these numbers matter so much. We have more than six decades of research from a wide variety of disciplines, sociology, psychology, political science, education, and urban studies, among others, showing that separate schools are still unequal. Students who walk into racially segregated high-poverty schools every day tend to experience very high rates of teacher, principal, staff, and peer turnover, which leads to an unstable educational environment. Their teachers have less experience and are less likely to be highly qualified. Students in these schools often confront issues of safety and violence and are disproportionately suspended and expelled from school altogether. The facilities are often in serious disrepair, and textbooks, technology, and curricula are often outdated. Segregated high-poverty schools are the most likely to be labeled dropout factories that graduate fewer than 50% of their students. They also tend to be linked to lower academic achievement. These are just some of the dimensions that contribute to and perpetuate inequality in segregated schools. On the other hand, though, research shows that many academic, social, and civic benefits for kids of all backgrounds are linked to well-designed, diverse schools that take care to ensure that students aren't tracked into different types of courses. So as we begin to move through the troubling increases in segregation highlighted in the following report on Delaware, please keep these facts in mind. Ariel, do you want to take it from here?
I do. Thank you very much, Dr. Siegel Hawley. Good morning, everyone. I'm Ariel Lehmeyer, and I'm a doctoral candidate at Virginia Commonwealth University. The report being released today examines school segregation patterns in Delaware, the Wilmington metro area, and the five school districts within the metro, drawing on federal data from the National Center for Education Statistics for the period 1989 through 2010. This report highlights two broad trends. First, more than 50 years after Brown v. Board of Education, a case which included the 1952 Delaware case Gebhardt v. Felton, significant and rising shares of the state's black students enrolled in segregated schools that are intensely isolated by race and poverty. We also found that school enrollments in the state, as well as Wilmington and its districts, have become rapidly more diverse, particularly in the past decade. These rising levels of racial diversity bring many opportunities for integration, but a key challenge will be to ensure that the metro and its districts that become diverse remain diverse and do not resegregate. I'll walk you through some key figures related to school segregation for Delaware, and then the Wilmington metro area, which is home to 60% of Delaware's public school students. We will be posting the Metropolitan Summary as a separate document, along with the report, to make it easier for readers to access specific information about their locale. So now let's turn to the state. Delaware does reflect national population trends, and the share of white students enrolled in Delaware's public schools decreased close to 20 percentage points from 69% to 50% between 1989 and 2010. During the time period, the black share of enrollment grew modestly, comprising almost one-third of the student body. The Latino share of enrollment increased more than 300%, from 3% to 13%. The Asian share of enrollment doubled, but even so, in 2010, it accounted for less than 5% of the total enrollment. Between 1989 and 2010, the number of multiracial schools grew close to 1.5 times, accounting for 41.5% of Delaware public schools. The share of predominantly minority schools increased more than tenfold to just under 60% of schools. Okay, now let's review some of the trends as they played out in the Wilmington metro area. Between 1989 and 2010, total student enrollment in the metro area increased by 51% to 68,559. Additionally, the growth in the number of suburban students outpaced that of urban students. Moreover, by 2010, the student enrollment became multiracial. White students constituted 45% of Wilmington's public school enrollment, a 34% decrease from 1989 when they made up 68% of that enrollment. By comparison, Latino enrollment grew by 367%, from 3% to 14%. As we examine segregation, it's important to note that in 1989, benefits from Delaware's landmark desegregation plan were still evident. Neither intensely segregated nor apartheid schools existed in Metro Wilmington. However, fewer than 15 years after deliberate and aggressive decisions by the courts and lawmakers to dismantle that plan, in 2010, intensely segregated schools reached a troubling 15% of schools in the metro area, and apartheid schools accounted for almost 8% of Wilmington's public schools. Now, let's look at the segregation for black and Latino students. Fewer than 1 in 10 Latino and black students attending predominantly minority schools in 1989. By comparison, nearly 8 in 10 Latino and black students in Wilmington were enrolled in predominantly minority schools in 2010. Having increased 12-fold, predominantly minority schools comprised 60% of the metro schools. The average exposure level to white students was the same for both black and Latino students. However, at 35%, it remained a full 10% below the overall proportion of white students in Wilmington. In spite of these large changes, Delaware still has less segregation than adjoining states, which never had such plans. Looking beyond race, we found that in 2010, while just over 47% of Metro Wilmington students were low income, the typical white student attended a school where only 38% of the students were low income. In contrast, the typical black student attended one where 56% were low income, and the typical Latino student attended a school where 61% of the students were low income. Alarmingly, almost 90% of the students in Wilmington's apartheid schools were low income. These figures underscore the continuing overlap between intense racial isolation and concentrations of poverty. They highlight the deepening segregation by both race and class of Delaware's public school students, and they help to explain why separate still remains unequal. In 1989, segregation levels were very low and roughly the same both within and between districts. The effects of the dismantling of the DSEG plan became apparent by 2010. Rapid resegregation in Wilmington districts exhibited a moderately high level of segregation. They were shown to be 17% less diverse than the overall region, and the patterns of segregation could almost evenly be attributed to segregation occurring within districts and between districts. Finally, in 2010, while 40% of Wilmington's districts were classified as stably diverse, an equal share was resegregating non-white. That is to say, they were classified as diverse in the earlier time period and classified as predominantly non-white in the later period. The remaining 20% of districts were integrating non-white. there are a number of possible policy options that bear no relationship to the mandatory desegregation plan in place for two decades, from the mid-1970s to the mid-1990s. Instead, these involve intentional efforts to use school choice and housing opportunity strategies in innovative and appropriate ways. Delaware is at a crossroads. Regardless of the method, now is the time to proactively harness the opportunities that are present in the rapidly shifting dynamics of Delaware schools. Thank you for your participation today. The report, the Metro Summary, and a comparative national report are all available on the Civil Rights Project website. So now, let's return this call back to our moderator, Charlene, for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you'd like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from the line of Matthew Albright. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call here. The report, as far as I've read into it, and I confess I haven't been able to read all the way through it yet, but it seems the Neighborhood Schools Act is one of the biggest causes that you guys have isolated as the reason for why the state has started to resegregate. We recently had a lawsuit here from the ACLU saying that charter schools are also contributing to resegregation. I was wondering if there, first of all, if you guys specifically had heard of charter schools or were thinking that charter schools were a part of this problem, and second, more broadly, you know, what are the biggest factors that led to this?
Well, I could kick it off, and I'm sure Ariel, as the author, would want to come in strongly. I think there are two things that we point out in the report that deserve a lot of attention. One of them in terms of policy. One of them is the court decision in 1996 that really dismantled the legal structure of the desegregation that had been in place in Metro Wilmington. And the second is the persistent effort of the legislature to deny school districts options and to force them into a neighborhood school pattern. We know from work across the country that when you go to neighborhood schools in a residentially segregated area, you get segregated schools, and basically students of color tend to end up in very high poverty segregated minority schools, and white students tend to end up in middle class schools that are more stable and have stronger staffs. So you begin to get an educational and social division right away. So Ariel, why don't you go ahead?
Those were the two main points that we looked at. Delaware had a large number of students who were already in private school. We really did not look at the charter trend at that point, but truly, the fact that not only were some of the districts required to create districts that are create catchment zones that were local to the housing, there clearly was a change in some of those zones as well to reinforce segregation as opposed to try to foster a desegregated environment.
And I would just add, although these reports have not, in general, looked at charter school segregation, the Civil Rights Project did release a report in 2010 called Choice Without Equity that documented extensive patterns of segregation across the country and in states and metropolitan areas, that the levels of segregation in charter schools were much higher than our already segregated regular public school systems.
So I guess, is it fair to represent it as you guys did not specifically look at the impact of charter schools in the Wilmington desegregation cases, but you have found generally that there can be extensive patterns of segregation in charter schools? Is that sort of a fair way to represent it?
What we found is that for black students, charter schools nationally and in most places we've looked tend to be even more extremely segregated than public schools. In our recent New York report, we did look at charter schools, and we found, for example, in Manhattan, that 97% of the charter schools that have been created in recent years are intensely segregated, in some boroughs 100%. So basically, charter schools tend to lack the basic civil rights protections and policies that were incorporated in good magnet schools. So this is a national kind of problem, but this was not a focus of this particular report.
I got you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you'd like to register for a question, press 1-4 on your telephone. We have a follow-up question from the line of Matthew Albright. Please proceed.
Hi. You mentioned private schools. Did you guys look at figures for private schools and what impact that has had on resegregation?
We haven't looked at them in this report, but basically what's happening nationally in private school enrollment is that it's declining as a percentage of total school enrollment, has been for a while. It's much lower than it was back in the civil rights era when about 1/6 of the children in the country went to private schools. But we know this was not part of this study.
Right, because this would be specifically from when the desegregation order was lifted and the private school issue goes from
and
much
this
before
is a
that.
Focus on public schools where public policy
right.
matters more directly.
Gotcha.
But it is a good subject to look at. And
I gotcha.
It can play a significant role, although private schools are becoming more diverse as well.
Yes.
If there are no more questions, we would really like to thank you for the opportunity to present this report and say that we'll be happy to answer your questions as time goes by. And you can write to us at civilrightsproject.edu. UCLA.edu, and you can find all of these reports and more that are coming along at the website of the Civil Rights Project, which you can find in 1 second in any search engine. we look forward to answering your future questions. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.